In today's episode, Mike yells at a cat, I yell at scientists, and Samantha wants to shoot trash into space. This is Labyrinth. Cool. Well, I guess before we get to that, we should get to Labyrinth, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
I hear it's a maze.
It's much further than you think.
You know what? You guys remind me of the babe.
What babe?
The babe with the power.
Mike, you say it. What power?
What power?
Well, with that stunning rendition, hi. Welcome to Funsphere. Are we going to go with movie club or film club
movie
today? What do you guys? We're going to go with. All right. Welcome to Funsphere Movie Club.
I've already branded them.
I'm Josh.
I'm Sarah Williams.
And I'm Jareth.
Mike, if anybody could pull off being a Jareth, I think it's you, pal.
I'm humbled by that.
Well, I'm glad.
I could be the Goblin King.
I would definitely be like Goblin 4, just in the background somewhere.
You'd be Hoggle, because just a similar temperament.
And an affinity for plastic.
All right, so today we are talking about the 1986 film Labyrinth. This is Samantha's suggestion, so why don't you tell us, you know, you're running the show today. So, run the show.
Okay. Jim Henson, George Lucas joint.
Yes. I think if they branded their films that way, they'd be much more popular than they already are.
The problem is George Lucas. Yes. I don't even know how much of a say he had in this, because I was watching the making of documentary before we got on. And they mention him in the beginning, and then he never shows up again. It's all like Brian Froud. Oh, I should tell you guys what it's about. We know, though. A girl wishes away her baby brother to the goblins, and they take him, and she is surprised Pikachu face, but actually decides to go get him back by solving the labyrinth.
Yes.
And Mike hasn't finished the movie, so who knows if she wins.
We're going to assume she does.
Yeah, it is a kid's movie, so she does win. So we'll just get that out of the way. Okay. So one thing I just want to kind of note, this is, of course, Jim Henson's last directorial film. He died in 1990, and... this was his last one that he helmed, so it's kind of unique in that, I'd say. And as Samantha mentioned about the collab, this is like the Jim Henson, George Lucas. You know, they basically kept teaming up between them and Spielberg in the 80s to make a whole bunch of movies. And as a huge fan of the Muppets, I am also very apt to say that when Henson isn't doing Muppets, he's not doing too much at all. I'll just get it out of the way. I'm not a huge fan of this film.
Do you like Dark Crystal?
I do like Dark Crystal more.
See, I think that's typically to make it simplified and what is it? Like heteronormative as possible. Guys tend to like Dark Crystal. Girls tend to like Labyrinth.
Okay. All right.
That's a huge generalization. That's my disclaimer. There's so many asterisks there, but
yeah. All right. So let's focus on that, because that is a very interesting topic to bring up. So Samantha, when did you first see this film, or were made aware of it?
So, well, I also want to say I do like Dark Crystal. I just like Labyrinth more. My mom actually rented it one time when we were going up to Tahoe, and so I would have been like 15 or 16.
Okay.
So it's exactly the protagonist's age.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I didn't actually watch the whole thing at that time, so I was really confused by it, and I didn't really know what to think of it. I was so confused by it then, and I was like, why is he saying he loves her? He's the bad guy. I don't get it. Blah, blah, blah. What's happening? And then, like, for some reason, a couple years later, I was still in high school. It was before my family moved to Tennessee, so I was probably 17 or 18. Just for some reason, I was thinking about the movie again, and then I watched it, and I became obsessed with it.
Okay.
And, yeah, I think it's just, like, David Bowie, and like, just being able to, like, project right onto to Sarah, and then, like, already being kind of similar to her, and then just, like, the Goblin King was great. And just, like, you know, falling in love with him, and then, like, also, just, yeah, I think just it's ripe for projection, which is...
That is something that a lot of critics have brought up, actually, so I think that's very interesting that it also seemed to be something that you thought about.
And I think it's kind of the point, because the whole thing is supposed to be, like, her going from childhood into, like, growing out of her childhood.
Yes.
Maturing. So... it makes sense. So I kind of saw it right at the exact perfect time.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then a thing, because there's like actually a fan comic that I really like that sort of continues it, but it's super meta, so it's not really. But she made some comment about how the stuff with Jareth and Sarah isn't really resolved at the end.
No,
and that's why people probably who were so into it then, like, they just haven't been able to let it go, because there's just, it's like a book left open, and I hear there's a sequel coming, but I don't know. We'll see. I hope Paul Bettany plays Jareth, because he kind of has a Bowie-esque face, and he is married to Jennifer Connelly. And my tinfoil parasocial conspiracy theory is that she probably had a crush on David Bowie at some point, and that sort of maybe led to this subconsciously.
Okay. All right, so I'm just gonna ask you. You mentioned that you've been into some of the fan works on it. Have you got your hands on any of the official sequel stuff?
There's the manga's bad, and it has since been retconned. No longer considered canon. Thank God. Return to Labyrinth.
Okay. Is that the one where Toby goes back as a teenager?
Yes. That's the one that has beautiful cover art, and then you open it, and it's, like, worse than normal comic art from the two. Okay. Now comic art's pretty decent, but, like, 10 years ago? 15?
Yeah, I think so, based on the notes I see here.
It was pretty ugly.
Okay.
But, yeah, that apparently is no longer canon. And then there's another official comic that I read that may or may not be Jared's backstory. They kind of like chicken out at the end on confirming it or not.
Okay.
Which is weird.
I'm actually gonna, that's an interesting comment for me, because I think Mike unfortunately to skip to the end of the movie. I think it kind of chickens out at the end on making a decision about whether or not she's grown up or not.
Yeah.
Because all the puppets come back at the end.
Yeah.
And you're talking about also leaving things unresolved. There is very clearly no resolution to whether or not Jareth was finally... Is he defeated? I can't even
remember. I don't know, because he was there at the end. He was the owl outside her window. Owl. So they make it sort of seem like it could all be a dream. Yes. But it isn't. Like, Canonically, yeah. It isn't, but there's still plenty of evidence that could show it was a dream, because so many things in her room match what's in the labyrinth. But I think official word is like, it's sort of your labyrinth experience is sort of curated.
Your labyrinth experience will vary.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like, it's curated to like anything to make you not go on. But then he says he did it all for her, so he made it what she wanted.
True.
But is he lying? There's so many things.
All right, Mike, you've not really had a chance to jump in here, so tell us a little bit about what you thought about it with your brief experience with the movie.
Well, my first takeaway, I'll say I watched the first hour.
Okay.
Or close to an hour, yeah. So around the halfway point.
Sure.
First takeaway is, God damn, this looks like an expensive endeavor.
It was $25 million at the time it was filmed in 86. Very expensive.
And even the, like, how much personnel you need to handle all the puppets. Like, the, whenever they do the scene with the helping hands.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, I just want to see the other side of that wall. Because it's got to be, like, that. People on top of people on top of people just to make it work.
You should watch that making of. All the sets are just, like, full of holes.
I will. Because it sounds interesting. It's definitely a movie where you want to see how they made all that work.
Yeah.
I appreciate the humor that I've seen so far. It's a... I guess it's another Henson staple. I don't think I've ever seen anything that he's done that didn't have a bit of humor in it.
Just a bit. Dark Crystal's a little more humorless.
Yeah, but not entirely. You got
just a
Fizzy Wig or whoever, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, wait, Fizzy Wig is from...
My bad.
And that... Yeah,
I don't know, the thing. You have that little fuzzy boot dude.
Yeah, yeah. So, Mike, just a quick question. Have you seen The Dark Crystal?
Nope.
Okay, ooh. Cool. Okay. Go ahead. So, keep...
I mean, I like the humor. I was not as much of a fan of the girl.
Jennifer Connelly?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she comes into her own in later stuff, but kind of poopy acting.
Well, yeah, she's really young. Actually, you know what's weird? When I was younger, I used to like how old she was. But now when I watch it, all I can see is she's so young.
She's 14.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, that explains. Yeah. She just hadn't come into her own, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah... You know, I do a little bit of research on these things. Just a quick aside. You guys ready here? A murderer's row of actresses that could have played that role?
Sure.
So we'll start with, of course, with Helena Bonham Carter.
Weird.
Jane Krakowski.
What?
From Malcolm in the Middle?
From 30 Rock, yeah.
Jenna.
Oh.
Yasmin Bleeth. Sarah Jessica Parker.
No.
Marissa Tomei. Laura Dern. Ali Sheedy. And Mia Sara, which I will have something to say about her, a movie she was in a little while. So isn't that wild? And then to kind of like pivot to something Mike said about like the like huge cast and production crew and stuff like that, you would think this movie would, and this is something that also comes up with Labyrinth, and I'll just say, I don't think you can really, you always kind of end up talking about the two of them together. Strangely enough, Labyrinth and The Dark Crystal, anything that Henson does. So, like, you got Jim Henson and George Lucas as, you know, producers and directors and whatnot. Also, the film was written by Terry Jones of Monty Python fame.
Hmm.
Although, actually, there was a lot of revisions. Lucas was involved with the script. There was a bunch of other, like...
I feel like the script went through, like... a lot of like four different versions.
Yeah. There's just a lot of people that wrote it and stuff like that. Like, these were like the Hollywood heavies at the time, like even the Monty Python guy, you know, Terry Jones is, he went on to make a lot of movies in the 80s and was still coming off the heat of Monty Python. And so it's just wild about like how many stars are on this. And it's even more surprising on the Dark Crystal, Mike, because like basically it was the best of the best special effects people and stuff like that at the time, like hands down. And it is a movie that is, you know, I'll say really cool looking. And I think this movie is really cool looking, but the story is just somehow weak in both of them. It's really weird.
The baby in this movie, you know, is was one of the animation leads on Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Yep.
He went into the family business.
He did.
Hmm.
Yep. Let's see here. I was going to say, what else do we got? I keep just veering this off course, unfortunately. All right, so I guess I'll tell you guys a little bit, like I said, about my thoughts. You keep hearing me mention that I always compare this with The Dark Crystal. In my head, there's actually a third movie that gets lumped in with these three. They have really next to nothing in common with each other. Have either of you seen Ridley Scott's film Legend?
No. Yeah.
Tom Cruise. Okay.
That one's actually in that comic that I like. A fan comic. Okay. It's a big crossover. It's crazy. Yeah.
That I could see that. So, years and years ago, when my little brother was seeing The Dark Crystal for the first time, he was like, wow, with stuff like this, why isn't there a Legend of Zelda movie? And I said to him, I was like, if you take this movie, The Dark Crystal, mix it with Legend, and add a little sprinkling of Labyrinth, you would have the Legend of Zelda movie. So, I like, they have very similar plot points. I really like Legend the movie. It's another one of those kind of bad movies, but I totally love it. Darkness is terrifying in that film. I will say that. That is maybe the coolest animatronic, and then to hear, oh my, Tim Curry's voice coming out of it is a little, it's like Tim Curry is one of those guys, even though, you know, his voice is so funny and stuff like that, he can do scary. He absolutely can. And not just it, he can do, Darkness is way scarier than it.
Even
was.
Still, he can. Auntie Whispers.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. He did do Auntie Whispers.
Oh, nah.
So I guess just for me, all of these films, like I said, they kind of lack, either they will have not enough action, which is the Dark Crystal's downfall. It is a very slow type movie. Or they won't have the like stakes. Like this movie lacks the stakes, and like I said, it really chickens out at the end.
There were stakes in the Bog of Eternal Stench.
True. It could have
fate worse than death.
Super smelly. But just for some reason, even though I will freely admit, like fantasy movies, like besides, like I guess Star Wars. I don't know if you would you consider Star Wars a sci-fi film or a fantasy film?
A blend, maybe.
A blend. Yeah, okay. So I'll be the
first. It's a sci-fi opera.
A space opera, if you will. Like, or maybe even a space odyssey. That's a clever joke. I feel like, I don't know why all these movies are letdowns. And like I said, and I love the Muppets. Like, I still think the Muppets are hilarious to this day, and I have since I was a little kid.
I think you're right. All of them lack something. They lack some part of it. To like, they're all missing something. But like with I think part, like, what you see, like, on the screen, if you're just sort of watching it, is still really enjoyable. And then I think just, like, whatever it activates in your mind to make you, like, imagine more is yeah. what is good about them.
Okay.
It's just very yeah. impressive seeing all these outlandish creations and yeah. wondering how the mind came up with them.
Yes. But I will also say, do you think all of these films, and I know this is a much bigger conversation regarding things like animation and stuff like that, by still sort of catering to children, do they hold themselves back? Like, I am fascinated with, you know, Guillermo del Toro does films that are still, even though they might have, like, a kiddish aspect, you could definitely tell these are not made for children.
Yeah, yeah.
But these, as much as they do have, like, darker elements and stuff like that, they're still kind of made towards kids. And I know that that's... I'd like to see, like, some... I would have liked to have seen something that Henson could have made where he wasn't as hamstrung,
yeah.
I think.
I mean, I would have liked if they could have gone a little... like, pushed it a little bit more.
Yeah. Have you seen the early SNL stuff that yeah. he did? That was very yeah. adult.
Even yeah. the Muppet Show.
Mm-hmm.
When it first started out. I'd yeah. like to see him, like... really push, I guess, maybe the horror element. Mm. I guess.
Yeah. Not dirty jokes.
I'm sorry?
You said and not dirty jokes.
And not just dirty jokes, yeah.
Yeah, not just dirty. Yeah, yeah. Like, Labyrinth, I think, you know, because it will start to... because it doesn't have to be, like, super dark or whatever. But it would, like, start to be a little more grounded. And then, like, the goblins, they're silly anyway. But then it would just, I don't know, I feel like just a little fine-tuning and it would have been less, like...
it's always, like,
we're all just going to fall over, you know? Like,
yeah. That's the thing for me. Like, it's, like, these films are, like, a solid B-. Like, you could tell with just a little bit more tweaking or a little bit more willingness to go in a more adult thing, they could have been really, really good. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, people love these movies, and they're huge cult classics. But
yeah, yeah. Well, because I know Labyrinth was not a success initially.
No, it was not. You know. It did technically make its money back when it went international. It was a bigger hit overseas than it was in the U.S., which is interesting because they changed a lot of the story to appeal more towards the U.S. audience, it looks like, with some of their casting and stuff like that. Because it was supposed to essentially be a little Victorian England type girl, but they decided to go with an American instead. All right, but let's talk about the wildest thing in this film for sure. The casting of David Bowie as Jared.
I really thought you were just going to say the crotch.
I don't plan to bring it up.
The third lead.
The third lead.
The bulge.
Yeah, his bulge.
The cod piece of Jareth. So again, you guys ready to hear this? He was not the first pick for the character.
Really?
They were thinking of getting Kevin Kline at first.
They also thought of Michael Jackson or Prince. Prince could have been interesting. Those, Michael Jackson would not have aged well.
And Sting.
Sting.
And Mick Jagger, apparently. Which, all I can see.
Why did it have to be a musician? Did they want somebody doing the soundtrack?
Yeah, they'll.
I think so.
Yeah,
sounds like it.
They spoilers for the documentary, but Jim Henson just basically had an idea. What if the Goblin King was a rock star, and then they just went? They just became married to the idea. And then I think they thought about a bunch of other people, but David Bowie was the first person they settled on and approached. And he was all in.
Had he acted before this movie?
Yeah.
Had he?
Because I know he's been in other stuff. I just didn't know.
He mentions being some sort of gnome. And then he mentions that he had to make the baby sounds on Dance Magic Dance because the baby they got wouldn't do anything.
Hmm.
I was going to say, I'm familiar with Bowie usually like playing himself and stuff, so I wasn't aware
this was
done
before. This is after his alien phase, right? Because wasn't he in something? The Man Who
The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Yeah, I don't know when that was.
That was definitely So Bowie's career, I think, has several interesting phases. It's got the Ziggy Stardust era. It's got the Thin White Duke era, which this is, I think... Mike, would you agree that this is set during that time of his career?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And then it's got... Then he has, what, the Berlin time, and then he has basically his... I guess we would have called it his modern era. Am I missing any there, Mike, that you can think of?
Not that I can think of.
Okay. So, yeah, like, he was definitely... past the space stuff and into the like the aristocrat type Bowie right now, I'd say.
Okay. That worked out then. That worked out very perfectly.
It did. For him to play a king, he is technically an aristocrat already.
You know, I did really love the exchange. I don't know if you got to this part yet, Mike. In the tunnel, where it was just nice and quick, where he says... They go, higgle hoggle yes. Just the back and forth of the dialogue was very quick and good.
Yes, I did see that part.
I like that. That's just before he sets the cleaners upon them.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
But I really love the first scene because it's so silly. Like, you know, Jim Henson just loved that they had that guy who could like do the thing.
Yes.
So he was like, all right, when Jareth first comes in, you just do behind that, just go like this, like, yep. for no reason.
Stand behind the gentleman and put your arm through his armpits. We'll fix it in post. Don't worry. It'll look great.
Do it so much.
Yes. I always look for that in movies and shows, like all the tricks they try to use to make it seem like it is the character that's doing it. Even though it's clearly not.
Yeah. The next time he does it, it makes more sense to me when he like flips his hand to make it turn into something else. That made sense. But when he's just standing there like, ooh, look at this, it always cracks me up. And it was just because Jim Henson liked it.
Yeah.
And also him throwing that snake just kills me every time.
You mean the scarf?
The scarf that becomes a snake. Don't defy me. So silly. I love it. It's very, very cheesy.
Gotcha.
I think it's a fun film. But it does... Yeah, there is more, which is also why I think that there's such a strong... There's, like, so many fan works for it. Because there's just too much... Too many ideas presented that are never... like seen through.
Agreed. Like, I don't know if I don't think there was any indication that they were planning to make a sequel for it.
They are now.
They were planning now, but I think since David has passed, they're probably gonna.
No. They
maybe
this was announced after.
Hang on, I'm looking at some of the notes I've got here.
Brian or Toby.
Yeah.
That's why I'm all in. I think if they have Jared, they have to. I mean, if not, I'll just ignore it. But.
So the world itself is not interesting enough for a sequel. You need Jared.
Yeah, because that's like it's like if trying to think of something that'd be similar. Like, if you just had a movie with, like, a bunch of unresolved things with those main characters, and then they made a sequel, you're like, finally, I'm gonna find out more about this, and then none of the main characters are in it. Like, or none of the original main characters are in it. It's like if How to Train Your Dragon just, like, left Burke and then moved on to some other island and never talked about Hiccup or Toothless again.
Gotcha. That's one of the things that's, I think, very tricky about sequels is sometimes a film will create a world that you want to see more of, and then you're right. Sometimes you just want to see more of the same characters. I think that's a problem that Star Wars is facing. I think it's a problem that Harry Potter has faced. It's like the world does, well, I mean, besides the author causing a lot of problems. I was going to say, because they're already talking about doing a Harry Potter reboot. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy.
Hmm.
Yeah, a series on Max.
Yeah.
It's such a dumb name change.
Yeah, I know. And the fact that you had to re-download the app.
Very annoying.
This is like the third or fourth time that HBO's pulled that shit, too.
Yes. Yeah. They were HBO Go. Then now?
And then weren't they just HBO before Go?
I think they were HBO before.
There was a difference between HBO and HBO Go.
Oh, was there?
Yeah, I had HBO Go subscription, which apparently was not the same as regular HBO, because regular HBO became HBO Max, but HBO Go did not. So it didn't have access to any of the Max things. It's all Warner Brothers. I told you they threw out a completely finished Scooby-Doo movie.
They did a lot of... They threw out a completely finished Batgirl movie.
Completely... Well, hopefully someone leaked it online, because somebody leaked the... Just put the Scooby-Doo movie up online, and I was able to watch it.
I think they only got a few, like, stills or something like that from it. Yeah, they had to do, like, just massive write-offs. It's like the plot of The Producers.
It's so weird. Like, they're finished. Just put them out.
You can technically make more money from a failure than you can a success.
That's crazy. They should at least sing that song. Springtime for Hitler gets in my head a lot.
I don't like, know if I would admit that on microphone.
It's from The Producers.
It is. It certainly is.
So that made me think, Samantha saying it's finished, just put it out. I don't know if you guys heard, but Nintendo actually just did that.
Yeah.
They made... So that game that came out when the Switch came out, 1-2 Switch, it was a party game that was really shitty.
Yeah.
And half an idea that somehow still sold well. Because I guess
it was a tech demo.
Yeah. But there was like very little... to actually do in the game, and because it was still a commercial success, they started working on a sequel, and it just got buried, and like they had play tested it and everything, and was met with some of the harshest criticism they've ever dealt with. So it just was done, but they sat on it. But then for whatever reason, they randomly decided this month to put it out anyway.
Oh, I know why they did it, because they're like, we're Nintendo, you'll buy it, shut the fuck up.
That's funny.
Give us money. Well, does anybody have anything left to say about the film?
I can't wait to finish it.
I was gonna say, Mike, are you gonna finish it? That was gonna be my next question.
Yeah, I will definitely finish it, and I'll watch the documentary.
They did so much crazy crap. It makes me really want more. I mean, I always do, but practical effects with maybe some fine tuning with CG. That's how it should be. I know it's expensive and time consuming, but it's better.
I think you could remake this movie if you put it in the right hands. I'd want Guillermo del Toro to direct it. I would want like a heavy practical effect split, just like Samantha said. I'd like 80-20 at the minimum, but I would prefer like 90-10. Speaking of quickly, did you guys see Guillermo del Toro is basically like, you know what, fuck it, I'm only making animated films from now on.
I did.
He
was mad about them all.
He's like, I love making these films so much, and that people just kind of like keep crapping on them because
he said
kids
something
films
about being annoyed that not the families aren't always boring, because his family was boring, and he, like, I didn't really get it, but I'm like, you do what you gotta do. You always make some good stuff, so.
he made good comic book movies. Hellboy.
Hellboy 2 were pretty good.
And did he do, I think he did Blade, too, now that I think about it. That movie was awesome.
You know, Pan's Labyrinth is another film I really enjoyed, but what really disappointed me about it was I didn't realize it was, like, 70% war film, 30% fantasy. maybe even less fantasy. I really wish there was more of the fantastical stuff, but it is still very good.
Although I also will offer a quick suggestion. If you wanted a director that's going to make it pretty much exactly the same way as it was originally made, give it to Peter Jackson.
Oh, he would. He's a different sort of whimsical than Guillermo.
Yeah.
Maybe the light and dark whimsies.
maybe that'll be like their team up.
They should film. Just change it. Age Sarah up. Make her like 25 or something. 25-year-old wishes a baby away.
You just want that, like.
I just want to be able to see myself in her again.
Okay.
You know what I just thought of that would be really cool is what if they took a popular property?
Yeah.
Like, we can use Labyrinth. Okay. So they take this movie and they're like, it's time for a reboot. And so they give it to two different directors simultaneously and release them both at the exact same time. So you can see this person's Labyrinth and this person's Labyrinth.
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be fun? Okay.
Yeah, that would be fun. Which one would be canon?
I also don't think that would be very cost effective for a producer.
Well, money's stupid. Because really, you know where we should be putting all our trash is in space.
Okay.
And the only thing stopping that is money. Put all of our trash in space. It will
burn up. We can shoot it into the sun. We have to end the episode here. Because
find a black hole. Throw all of it in. Not our problem anymore.
Much fuel we would burn.
They would invent, you know, they could, if they really wanted to, find some alternative. We could use our trash to power the rockets to put the rest of the trash in space.
Now, I will.
Do this because you can't make money off of it.
I agree with Samantha that scientists do need to get off of their ass and finally come up with some sublight propulsion systems. Scientists, you heard it here first. Get off your ass.
We were just talking about that because we were in Colorado last week seeing King Gizzard. And it sucks because, like, we had to drive to Nashville to fly out there since Knoxville's airport sucks.
Yeah.
It's more expensive.
And we were like, Ruby, shut up. We were like, you know, if they would stop wasting so much time with computer technology and put more effort into transportation, how much better this world would be.
The automobile industry keeps killing high speed rail in America. Can you imagine? It's like we had like a freaking bullet train up and down the coast. Pop up to New York City, go down.
And then
to
have one run parallel to I-40.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, here we are. Where's the tunnel now, Elon?
we'll save all this for our political podcast that we come up with. Man, we've got so many other podcasts. We got to do the one where we become sneakerheads and work on fashion. We got to be the ones where we talk about politics, and, you know, we'll just keep doing our movie club.
We should just do the cartoon one because, you know, because Ryan's dragging his feet on moving out. And I know you're going to hear this, Ryan.
I want you to hear this. All right. Well, we'll cut it here, and we'll see you next time, folks. Bye.
Bye.